Well, for the first time, scientists experimenting on the Great Barrier Reef have found strong evidence that ocean acidification is already slowing the growth of coral. Ocean acidification is caused by carbon dioxide emissions dissolving in the ocean and reacting to form an acid. Experiments in the lab have shown that more acidic water can interfere with the growth of coral, but just how much it impacts on natural reefs has proven almost impossible to measure until now. Now, a remarkable new experiment involving a natural reef has shown the impact of ocean acidification on one of our nation's most recognised natural wonders. Professor Ken Caldera is one of the leaders of this research project. He's a climate scientist in the Carnegie Institution for Science at Stanford University. He's speaking with Tim Roxburgh.
It's been observed that the Great Barrier Reef is growing more slowly than it was several centuries ago. But it's not known the extent to which, say, coastal pollution or overfishing or global warming or ocean acidification is causing that decrease in reef growth. And so we wanted to do an experiment where the only thing that changed was the ocean chemistry so that we could isolate the effect of ocean chemistry relative to all of these other things that could potentially impact coral reefs. We went to One Tree Island because One Tree Island is a really unique reef in that it's called a ponded reef, which means that at low tide, it kind of acts like a bathtub with the water inside the lagoon being higher than the seawater outside.
You can then just alter the level of acidity in the bathwater, I suppose you could say, and then measure how fast the coral is growing?
Yeah, so at certain locations, the water, even at low tide, is kind of pouring over the sill of the bathtub. And so what we did was we added an antacid to the water right before it flowed over the sill, and that sill was the reef itself, and then measured the water as it flowed, you know, on the other side of the sill. And so this gave a nice, clean way to get a unidirectional flow where our added chemically modified water would flow across the reef.
And so you made the water around the reef less acidic. What effect did you find that that had?
We found that the reef grew substantially faster when the acidity was neutralized. What we tried to do was bring the pH or the acidity of the seawater closer to what it was a few hundred years ago. The idea was to try to replicate conditions as they were pre-industrially, and we found that when those conditions were replicated as best we could, that the reef grew faster. And so from that, we determined that the chemistry change that has occurred over the last few centuries is causing the reef to grow slower.
So let me get this straight. If humans hadn't already pumped large amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, the barrier reef and that reef where you were working would most likely now be bigger or would be flourishing to a greater degree.
That's correct. And we have a plan to go back this September and October and do the other side of this. So the experiment that was published today, we was aiming to bring the chemistry closer to what it was a few centuries ago. This September, October, we're planning to try to bring the chemistry closer to what it might be at the end of this century if we don't curtail our emissions. And our guess is that will cause the reef to grow much slower.
Having spent so much time on that particular reef, how did it feel to know that that coral, in what looks like a really pristine environment, that coral is already being stunted by the acidity of the oceans caused by carbon emissions?
I guess Bill McKibben some time ago wrote a book called About the End of Nature, but there's really no pristine nature left, that we're impacting the world everywhere. And it's kind of sad to think that even something as beautiful and as complex as this remote coral reef is impacted by our burning of coal, oil, and gas.
You've spent upwards of 6 months at this particular reef trying to make this experiment work. It wasn't an easy experiment to get set up, was it?
Yes, this experiment was very difficult because we were really going to the very limits of our measurement ability. Natural ecosystems are very variable, and to try to detect our signal of the effect of our treatment amid all of this natural variability was quite difficult. And it took us 3 attempts, and each of these attempts involved something like 10 people out there for 2 months. And we were flying equipment from the United States and so on to work there. And so it's quite expensive and time consuming. And it really says something about the role of failure in science, that we were able to succeed only because we had the luxury of failing a couple of times and then figuring out why we failed and try to correct those problems and make it work. And in today's funding environment, where there's cutbacks for science funding, it's a rare luxury to attempt an experiment twice and have it fail twice and then do it a third time and have it succeed. And it's really one of the benefits of where I work.
Speaking of funding cuts, you've said before that you wouldn't recommend that young scientists go into climate science today because the real focus now should be on what we should do about climate change. Our national scientific institution, the CSIRO, has recently said much the same thing. It's shifted funding away from climate science, saying that money should be going into what to do about climate change. Do you think that that's a justifiable shift?
I think the problem is looking at this as zero sum, that yes, we certainly need greatly expanded research into what we need to do to solve the problem, but that shouldn't cannibalize the basic science. There's plenty of other waste in government spending and lower priority research items. And so the idea that you have to kill off basic climate science in order to study how to solve the problem doesn't seem right. I could name a lot of other things that our government does that waste money that could be put towards solving the climate problem. I do think that climate science is mostly diagnosing what the disease is and not coming up with a cure for the disease. And we do need to focus on the cure.
That's Professor Ken Caldera, one of the leaders of this research project, a climate scientist from the Carnegie Institution for Science at Stanford University. He was speaking with Tim Roxburgh, and this new research has just been published in the journal Nature.